Hey.
Hey, what's going on, Mason? How you doing?
Doing pretty well. How you been?
I've been pretty great and excited for this season to finally get kicked off.
Yeah, man. It feels like every year the season starts earlier.
You know what? It did feel like this offseason was short, but somehow more painful. I mean, painful is not the right word, but I think I'm just extra excited for this year. I don't know if my fan interest goes up every year or if it's just this one specifically, but I'm ready.
Yeah, me too. And I'm the Pelicans' first preseason game is in Chicago, so I'm pretty pumped about that. I get to watch the team before anyone else in New Orleans does.
That's awesome. Denver's in San Diego for camp, so I ended up having to fly an extra expense I was hoping to avoid this year. To go watch them work out. But are they not doing like training camp somewhere? I know there's a couple teams that are going to China and stuff. New Orleans isn't doing that, are they?
No, nothing I've heard there. They're just the standard stuff.
You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
All right, well, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. You can check us out and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And the voice you are hearing across from me via Skype is Mason Ginsberg, covering the New Orleans Pelicans for Bourbon Street Shots, a resident Pelicans expert, and as continuing my series on which teams are fighting for the playoff spot and possibly a team that can knock the Nuggets out of a playoff spot. The Pelicans certainly fit that bill. So I want to talk with Mason about just where that team is at. And let me start with this. What were some of the big additions and subtractions to the Pelicans roster this year?
Well, I think everyone knows maybe one of the craziest moments of the offseason being DeMarcus Cousins parting ways and heading over to the Bay to play with the Warriors for at least part of the season whenever he can get back. And so that was a pretty crazy 24-hour period with the Rondo news, Julius Randle news, and then Cousins. It was a lot of ups and downs, to say the least.
Did you think that Cousins was going to go? I mean, did you think he would be back?
I wasn't confident about it, but I did think he was going to be back. The market kept dwindling for centers. I mean, you saw all these teams, I guess, and then when the news finally broke about DeAndre Jordan to Dallas, you just looked at the landscape of the NBA and where is he going to get the money from? And the Pelicans had his bird rights. So it just seemed like they were going to be able to, even if it was just a 1 year prove it deal, that they could give him, you know, 10, 12 million or whatever it would end up costing. And Cousins said, he must have felt disrespected and decided to take a one year deal with the Warriors. So the Pelicans took it and took it in stride and they were ready for a backup plan. I think they found a pretty good one in Julius Randle.
Also being added, Elfrid Payton, who I think he's okay. I don't think he's as bad as he looked in Orlando. What do you make of him replacing Rajon Rondo?
Yeah. So I'll say the co-host or he does most of the hosting. I'm kind of the side guy, I guess, in our podcast with Shemit for our Bourbon Street Shots podcast. He wrote a great column on Gentry Ball and how Elfrid Payton specifically fits the team really well in terms of getting quick, good looks. I can't remember the exact stat, but something about how he's one of the best guards at getting to the rim and finishing at the rim, which is I thought pretty interesting and not something that I feel like most people would know about him, because I mean, not many people probably know a lot about him just because he's the teams he's played on between Phoenix and Orlando. And so I don't think he's, you know, I think it's similar to Rondo, where he's almost certainly not going to be in any sort of finishing five rotation, but I think he can do a lot of the things that Rondo did. I think what Rondo brought to the Pelicans off the court was more than what you can expect from Payton. But I think he'll fill a lot of the role that Rondo did on offense. I don't know if he'll start, but it wouldn't shock me if they want to keep playing Jrue off the ball. Defensively, it's bad, but again, not worse than what Rondo gave the Pelicans on defense.
What about the Randall Davis pairing in the front court? First of all, do you think that'll play a lot of minutes? And then second of all, what is that going to look like?
Yeah, I think the general consensus at this point is that you're going to see a lot of the pairings of those those three guys between those two and Nico. And
well,
so
Miritich and Davis are like a perfect pairing. I mean, to me, I think it's underrated how good those guys fit together. But Randall's so different.
Yeah, I think some people are trying to almost be too cute with thinking about, oh, should Julius Randle start instead of Nico? It's like, I mean, what Nico and AD did together while, I mean, down the stretch of the season and then the playoffs, is, I don't think you rocked the boat there. I think you stick with what was working. But that being said, I mean, Randle's going to play almost close to starter's minutes, if not starter's minutes. And I think it's going to be really fun. I think that the three of them, every different pairing is intriguing. And so I think that's one of the things that most of us are excited about, is to see how each of those, even Nico and Randle, I think will be fun. Not that we want to see AD off the court for any extended period of time, but it should be cool.
What's going to be the team's biggest strength this year? What is their bread and butter?
Anthony Davis. No,
kind of. I mean,
it's there. It's probably. I mean, honestly, there when Cousins went down, they went from an offensive power and defensive kind of struggling defensively to the opposite. And I think also one I got it. It was easy to forget is Solomon Hill. And he's not going to give you much of anything on offense. Mm-hmm. And he was came back pretty slowly from his hamstring injury. And he was, he didn't really contribute much even in the playoffs, but I mean, the hamstring injuries have a pretty good history of full recoveries. And so I think Solomon Hill and what he'll add to the team as another wing player for a team that kind of like Denver is so thin on pure wings, bigger wings, I should say, I think he'll be helpful too. And I think this team's going to be pretty solid defensively. They got a lot of, they're going to be pretty switchable in the sense that they don't really have those big wings, but they do have a lot of guards with size. And I think the front court players they had defensively, even Nico was pretty good in the playoffs up until the Golden State Warriors buzzsaw defensively. So I think defense is going to be their calling card, especially. I mean, they had two guys who made first team all defense last year.
Yeah. Is there a player on the roster that you think is going to make a big leap this year? He could even be one of the two new additions, but is there somebody you think will be significantly better than last year, not just marginally?
Tough to, I think so. I'm not sure if how big the gap has to be to qualify for this, but Ian Clark is a guy who really kicked it up a notch down the stretch. And I think the post Cousins style of play really helped him. And the numbers with him and Drew on the court together were actually really, really strong last season. And so I think I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring to the table. And I think the Pelicans agree. I was surprised when they got him back on non-Bird. I thought maybe someone would give him a little more money than that. But now the Pelicans are 1 year away from having full Bird rights on him. And I think that he's a guy they want to keep in their rotation. So I'm excited to see him play.
First of all, that's Denver Nuggets Summer League standout, Ian Clark. you need to make sure to put that in there. Ian Clark is a guy that I think is offensively, he's such a good fifth option off-ball shooter. I mean, he just moves well without the ball. He knows how to play. Defensively, you got to allow him a lot of protection. I think for me, the guy I could see Elfrid Payton surprising people this year. He's not an all-star. I mean, we kind of know what style of player he is and sort of like what his ceiling is, but I just think he's better than people give him credit for. We do this every year. There's the player that's been in a bad organization on a bad team with bad coaching, and you write them off, and then they go somewhere where that's not the case, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, where'd all these skills come from?
Yeah, and I think the key for New Orleans is they're going to have to figure out they don't want to have two non-shooters on the floor at the same time. So they got to kind of play with him and Solomon Hill and figure out what works. Because, I mean, there's a good case to be made that the Pelicans should open the season with the starting lineup of Drew Moore and Solomon Hill if they want to really double down on defense and clamp down on teams. But the flip side of that is trying to replicate what they did last year with Rondo and playing Payton and Ron and playing Payton and Holiday together. So I'm really curious who they end up going with as their starting five to start the year.
Here's my hot take. Lineups featuring Payton, Nico, and Davis are going to be really, really good offensively. I do think the spacing and from the two and the three is important, but I think more important is this, that 4-5 spacing. And there's few players, if any, that better at that vertical spacing than Anthony Davis. And then Miritich is just a knockdown shooter. I think I, I'm going to I feel pretty good about my Elfrid Payton's going to have a good year pick.
Yeah, and I mean, if he's sharing the backcourt with Drew and then on Etuan Moore, it's a little undersized, but only against certain teams. You know, that was one of the things we talked about last year when they went so hard on this three guard lineup when Solomon Hill got injured was. Yeah, I mean the Golden State Warriors of the world are going to kill you with that. The Celtics. So there are a few teams that you're going to struggle when you have Etuan Moore at the three or even Drew Holiday playing at the three on defense. But a lot of these teams, the Pelicans have enough bigger guards to really make it work. And I think they showed that last year. poor Etuan Moore got matched up against all these big guys so often. But I mean he's a capable defender for guys that are his size. And so
for the three or four players his size in the league. Yes. No, I'm just teasing you. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to ask Mason about the weaknesses on the roster and some of the ways that the season could go sideways and maybe knock them out of the playoffs. We'll be right back. All right, I'm back here with Mason Ginsburg covering the New Orleans Pelicans, and we're looking at why they will or why they won't make the playoffs. I think why they will, we discussed in that first section a lot of the things that make them interesting. Biggest weaknesses on this team, what would you say is the team's biggest weakness or maybe their two biggest weaknesses?
So the interesting thing, I mean, wing depth is clear first and foremost. That's a problem for them, and kind of a underrated issue is as good as Ian Clark was in the second half of the year, Darius Miller, who gave him really good minutes in November, December, was knocking down a bunch of shots. Cousins helped him give him more space, and he kind of struggled in the second half of the year. And he's one of the guys the Pelicans will probably try to count on for, 20 minutes or so a game. If that trend continues and he can't figure it out and he can't get his confidence back, that's a tough spot, for the Pelicans because they're just so thin there on the wing and having those sizable guys to guard some of those bigger players in the league. But
the wing clearly, because like Denver, they're sort of forcing guys into spots maybe that aren't perfectly natural at that three spot. But even inside, I think there's something there. I mean, obviously if Davis misses, then the team goes completely sideways. But if Mirotić misses, I think the team loses quite a bit. And you could maybe make the case even that Julius Randle, we haven't seen him, so we don't know, but he's a guy that I'm counting on to be a positive player off the bench for them. Any one of the misses from those three guys, if they roll an ankle or foul trouble or whatever, I think they're significantly worse.
Look, man, I you're not giving Jahlil Okafor enough credit. Okay?
I was listening to JJ Redick's podcast today. He also was singing the praises.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely true. They've got three guys who between them can shoulder most of the load on any given night in the front court. And if you add Solomon Hill to that, spending a few minutes at the four, given the fact the Pelicans are probably going to play a lot of small ball, you've got enough there. But you're right. If one of those big three guys miss time, that's trouble. Diallo, he put up some empty stats in summer league. I'll say I still think we were hoping for more of a jump from him. And at this point he's still no more than a fifth big, and he's going to have to show a little more to deserve more playing time. Emeka Okafor was great in his role, but he is what he is. I mean, he's 35, 36 years old, and he can help, but only against certain teams and certain situations. So, it's a fair point. And if there's any other weakness I really point to with this team, it's a lot of us have been singing the praises of, the Pelicans were so good with Nico on the team, and and they were on pace for 50 plus wins. And the flip side of that is they're playing such a fast pace. And can you sustain that for an 82 game season and playoffs? Yeah. And I think that's getting talked about more and more. And it's an interesting question. I don't know the answer. And even more interesting will be how Gentry manages that. And I think he'll probably try to keep that rotation a little deeper during the season to keep legs as fresh as possible. But to our earlier point, the Pelicans aren't that deep at a lot of positions. So we'll have to see how it plays out.
I think that depth will manifest itself. One of the things Denver had really 2 years ago and a little bit last year was they had a lot of depth, but there was only certain combinations that worked and then other combinations didn't. And I think you might run into a little bit of that. You talked earlier a little bit about Etuan Moore, and okay, we got to put a big guard next to him so you have some size in the backcourt. I think there's going to be a lot of those where, you know, oh, we got to sub this guy out for foul trouble, but if we sub him out, we got to sub this other guy out because we can't play this guy without that guy. And I think there might be, for the coaching staff, I think there might be a lot of difficult sort of piecing together the puzzle with five-man lineups.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and they're looking for – they basically what they did for their training camp roster was, it was stocked a bunch of wings on two-year unguaranteed deals and see if one sticks with – I think they like Troy Williams a lot. He's not a guy that's going to – I don't think he's going to come out of nowhere and suddenly be a huge positive player, but I think they're hoping he sticks. Another guy, it's not going to help on the wing, but if he can stay healthy, knock on wood, is Frank Jackson, their early second-round pick from last season. And he had a great few minutes of summer league and then went down and got hurt again. And so he's talented. I think there's no doubt. And I think the Pelicans really think he can help this year. So I think that's going to be one of the key questions early on for the Pelicans is can he provide some additional depth in the rotation and provide positive minutes for this team.
Is there a player you think will regress this year that maybe takes a step back from what they gave you last year?
I mean, Drew was so good down the stretch last year.
So good.
And he was great all year long. And then down the stretch in the playoffs, he just took it to another level.
He dominated against guys that are ranked higher than him, you know? I mean, like, he just outplayed. Even in that first series, the Portland one, I think he was the best guard in the series.
He's a reasonable pick, not because I don't think he's going to be good again this year. It's just because he just ended the season so strong. And we talked about pace already and keeping that up for 82 games and being the guy he was on both ends of the floor could be tough. I think what you saw from Nico is what you'll get. He's a streaky shooter. He was actually kind of trash shooting the ball for the Pelicans the first month or so he was on the team. And then he picked it up, especially during the playoffs. But I think the fact that he's a competent defender. He's not a guy who's going to be a clear negative. I think he showed in the Portland series what he can do on the defensive end. So I think there's a decent baseline for him. So I'm not as concerned about him, apart from the fact that he'll probably be streaky at times from the three-point line. So, so Drew's that guy. And hopefully he can pick up where he left off last year. But it's going to be, that he is playing at just such a high level on both sides.
What do you think Etuan Moore shoots from three this year? Because he was 42.5%, which is anything north of 40 is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been, for the bulk of his career, he's been a good three-point shooter. And so,
well, I think he's good, but I think I'm looking at it here, career 38%. The difference between 38% and 42, I think, is pretty massive.
it is pretty massive. I don't expect that kind of deviation from his typical performance. As long as he can continue to shoot the ball well and be a threat, I think that that helps this team. I'm more curious about guys like Darius Miller and other guys that we rely on to help space the floor. If they can make it, not only make it at a competent rate, but actually force teams to care. That'll matter.
All right, give me a yes or no answer for these. If Anthony Davis misses 20 games, do the Pelicans make the playoffs?
Gut is, it's borderline. I think they're very fringe. I feel pretty comfortable with them as a playoff team right now. It's hard to feel super comfortable in the Western Conference, but I feel like what they've done this offseason, I think I would be surprised if they don't make it. But if AD misses 20 games, I mean, they better get 80 games healthy from Randall and Nico to make the playoffs. Otherwise, they'll be in trouble.
So he's missed 20 games twice. I think he's missed, it looks like, 16 games once. So it's not unheard of that he would miss. He's a little injury prone, as most guys with his athleticism and that play kind of as hard as he does. What about Drew Holiday? If Drew Holiday misses, I'll say 22 games, do they make the playoffs?
Well, I feel like I gave one answer for AD, and I can't really give a different answer for a lesser player. No slight to Drew, but
yeah.
I do think if there's anywhere they have, I think they do have okay tread water depth at at guard. But the thing is, like, he's just so versatile on both ends and does so much for them. They're the only way that they make the playoffs if Drew misses significant time is if Solomon Hill takes a big step from where he was last year, and can be a factor, especially on defense the way he was 2 years ago. But I mean, anything he can give on offense, it would be great.
What about this one, Mirotić? I'll say 25 games. If he misses 25 games, do they make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think that's a sustainable player you can get by without him for a chunk of time, because AD and Drew clearly your best two players. And if you've got them, I think you can survive without Nico. You can put lineups together and even with Randall playing small ball with Randall at the five when AD sits and Solomon Hill at the four, you can piece it together without him.
Yeah. All right. Well, how many games are they going to win? What's your prediction? Have you made an official one yet, or what's your general sense?
I think they got better as a team than they were last year, given all the factors that were at play, especially, you know, cause Boogie missed half the year. So I like them to finish upper 40s and wins, which is right around where they were last year. I think they got better, but also the Western Conference somehow got better again. Yeah. The only team that got considerably worse, or that lost a major player, was the Spurs, and they didn't even have Kawhi Leonard last year except for a few games, and they still made the playoffs. So it just keeps getting tougher and tougher. So I like them around where they were last year, 48 wins or so.
48, man. This is, I think, the fourth show I've done, and everybody is saying 48 wins for their team. So
so last year, seeds 4 through 8 were 48 or 47.
Yeah. So it's not that crazy. Where do you think that gets them this next year in terms of, you know, in the playoffs? What seed would 48 get them?
I think they're right around where they were last year. I mean, the Rockets, Warriors are clearly better. Thunder are better. Jazz I think are better. And then the rest kind of comes down to, I think Minnesota's maybe slightly better right now, but the Jimmy Butler situation is interesting, so we'll have to watch how that plays out. So, I think they're a better team than the Lakers, top to bottom. And I would pick them to win more games than LA, just because I think LeBron is gonna take some games off. He can't do it all himself. So I have him around the sixth best team, maybe seventh best team in the conference.
One team Mason did not mention right there, the Denver Nuggets, and that's who we're going to talk about in the final section here. So let's take a quick break and let's get Mason's opinion about the Nuggets. We'll be right back. Nuggets fans now, I can feel their anger. They're shuffling in their chairs. All these teams you talked about getting better, no mention of the team in Denver. So just right off the bat, you seem to have Denver in a lower tier than teams like New Orleans, Minnesota, L.A. Does that sound about right, or was that just you forgot to mention them?
So I don't have them in a lower tier. The two teams I have missing the playoffs, I feel like it's a 10 team deep conference at this point. And I think it's the Spurs and the Blazers that miss. So I think Nuggets are a playoff team. I have them right around that same group. I think there's a giant cluster there, even with the Spurs and Blazers. But I think the Spurs have real problems with their wing defense now. I think that's something that Pop's a magician, but if he can pull out a good defense from what he's got now, they've got, It's just gonna be tough. And then I think Portland got worse, not much worse, but I think just in just stack ranking those 10 teams. They're all damn good, but I like Denver to make the playoffs over the Spurs and over the Blazers.
If you were to guess a win total for them, where would you go?
They're pretty close to New Orleans. I like the Pelicans team a little bit better, but like it's not, there's no wide margin by any stretch. I think the Pelicans are more versatile. I guess I feel better about them on on a lot better than them on defense. And I think the Nuggets are a better offensive team, but I think the gap for New Orleans to Denver on defense is a little bit, just a little bit wider than with Nuggets to Pelicans on offense. And so, I mean, I think Denver's around where they were last year, 246, 47, because they get a full season, hopefully, of Paul Millsap back. And so, assuming that happens, they should be a little bit better, but the, you know, flip side again of that is the conference got tougher, just like what just like my rationale for New Orleans. So it's going to, like I said, it's going to be a big cluster in the West again.
I've actually got Denver ahead of New Orleans in just from tier. Not, I mean, I do, I think that all these teams are going to be within a couple of games. I don't think it'll be that crazy of a separation, but you know, I look at it, I think Golden State is in a tier all their own. I think Utah, Houston, maybe even Oklahoma City, if they're healthy, although some of these health concerns now are starting to creep up. I think those teams are sort of in a tier. And then I put Minnesota, Lakers, and Denver. I mean, Lakers, who knows? They're such a mystery. But Lakers, Minnesota, Denver in a tier. And then I have New Orleans, Portland, San Antonio, with New Orleans as sort of the better of those three. But they're in the same tier.
So that's, I mean, and so it sounds fairly similar, and I like that we're kind of aligned on who the two teams that miss out. And I think that's what Vegas has too, but not like it's any sure bet, but I think we both agree on the top eight teams regardless. But yeah, I mean, the hope with, if you're buying into New Orleans, it's that they're running back the same group that really played great down the stretch last year. And with the lone exception of Rondo to Peyton. And if losing Rondo is going to make or break your season, you have other problems is kind of where I'm at. And so, I would have loved to get him back. I would have hated paying him the full mid-level exception to do it. I much rather grab a guy like Alfred Payton for the biannual and throw their full mid-level at Julius Randle, because I think he's going to play a key role for them. So, like I said, I think the roster is better than it was last year. Marginally so, but still better.
I'm going to try to look at the post All-Star break, because that trade happened right at the All-Star break, wasn't it?
The Nico trade happened before it.
A little bit before. Okay, and yeah, so they went 17-8 after the All-Star break. Denver 14-10. So actually, yeah, New Orleans, I know Denver kind of had a run there, but it looks like New Orleans just about the exact same. Although I think if you extend that through February, I think Denver might've been a little bit ahead. February was a crazy month because Jokic averaged a triple double for the month, and Anthony Davis was the Western Conference Player of the Month because he averaged like 40 points and had a bunch of game winning plays. So, yeah. I think both teams kind of had a very, their seasons ran parallel in terms of when they got good. How do you think New Orleans matches up with Denver in a playoff series if the two teams were to meet?
I think New Orleans matches up better with Denver than a lot of other teams because it's kind of the point that we harped on a couple of times earlier is that there's no wing player on Denver I'm concerned about the Pelicans going small and not having success against. And so the front court battle will be really fun to watch. I mean, you've got a bunch of all-stars down there between Millsap, Jokic, and then AD, and you know, Nico's not an all-star, nor is Randle, but I think they're both capable. You know, if Nico's hot and if Randle fits in as well as a lot of people hope that he does, he can get to being a very strong player at all-star level, maybe a little bit of a stretch, but that'll be fun to watch. Whoever they throw Drew up against is going to be pretty fun. I'm not sure. I think it would just be pretty switchable for the Pelicans on defense matching up against Denver. So I think I like that matchup better than, some of the other teams in the Western Conference.
I'm trying to look here to see, I know they played once with Paul Millsap healthy. It might've been the only time they played with Millsap there. And I'm trying to see, they lost. It was that was the game. Wow. So that was the 146-114 game. I didn't realize it was that one. So that was Denver put up their highest total in the last like 10 years. Again, I don't know. I just don't recall that game well enough to remember if there was a reason. Oh, it's because they started out. It was like 30-4 to start the game. The Pelicans actually stormed back in the middle portion of that game, if I recall. I don't see anything in here that would lead me to believe Paul Millsap has Anthony Davis's number or anything like that. I don't. I was hoping there would be something in there, but that does not appear to be the case. Alrighty, well, I guess that's it. Here, it sounds like so far I've had all these guests on. Everybody seems to have their team as good but not great, which I think is accurate. But everybody putting their team at 48 wins, I think, is especially interesting, especially since my total for Denver is also 48. So it sounds like the playoffs are going to be Golden State, Houston, Utah, and then everybody else just tied at 48 wins.
That, I mean, given what we saw last year, that actually would not shock me.
Yeah, wouldn't shock me either. Mason, thank you so much for coming on this show. And to everybody else, thanks for tuning in. We will be back again tomorrow with a brand new episode. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.